Hey guys, so welcome back. So today the book that we are going to see about is Yuval Noah Harari, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. Description: in Sapiens, he explored our past. In Homo Deus, he looked at our future. Now one of the most innovative thinkers on the planet turns to be present to make sense of today's most pressing issues. Fascinating a global how to take the problems of 21st century, named one of the best books of the year by Financial Times and Pamela Cowell Coit. Harari's 21 Lessons of 21st Century is a probing and visionary investigation into today's most urgent issues as we move into the uncharted territory of the future. As technology advances faster than our understanding of it, hacking becomes a tactic of war, and the world feels more polarized than ever. He addresses the challenge of navigating life in the face of constant and disorienting change and raises the important questions we need to ask ourselves in order to survive. In 21 accessible chapters, both are provocative and profound. Harari builds on the ideas explored on previous books. Untangling political, technological, social, and existential issues, and offering advice on how to prepare for a different future from the world now we live in. How can we retain the freedom of choice when big data is watching us? What will the future workforce look like, and how should we ready ourselves for it? How should we deal with the threat of terrorism? Why is liberal democracy is in crisis? So guys, let's start to deep dive in the book. And yeah, about author: Yuval Noah Harari is an Israeli public intellectual and historian. He is currently a professor in the Department of History at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. He holds a PhD from Jesus College, Oxford. Sapiens was Yuval's breakthrough work. He has since published two more books, Homo Deus and 21st Lessons of 21st Century. The book is an outline of most pressing questions in the modern world. The issue is most people do not have the luxury of time to investigate these questions. That said, all those who do not take the time to consider these dilemmas will be left behind when they overwhelm us. So, this book argues and that can help level the global playing field by offering knowledge. He aims to help more people join the debate about the future of the human species. This future will include artificial intelligence and one global civilization. The key is working out how can we solve problems alongside each other and AI. Chapter 1. Disillusionment. The book starts by taking into disillusionment visible in modern society. For example, the political disillusionment seen in European countries. He argues that one of the driving factors of disillusionment is information overload. Our brains do not easily process facts, numbers, and equations. Humans think in stories, and that is how political disillusionment can spread, leading to ideologies like fascism and communism. The lesson to learn from this is you should reutilize stories in your business endeavors. You should also ensure these stories are simple. The future offers opportunities to new types of stories that include humans, superhumans, and artificial intelligence. Harari believes AI will become increasingly sophisticated. He also believes superhumans will soon be created that combine AI and humans. Despite a change in the characteristics in our stories, Harari still believes that liberal story we can see today will prevail. Chapter 2. Work. The future of workspace will include significantly more computers than we see today. As we develop a better understanding of human emotions, desires, and choices, computers will become more versatile in workplaces. He uses the example of self-driving vehicles. He cites a study by the US National Highway Traffic Safety Administration from 2012. The study found 31% of fatal crashes involved alcohol abuse and 30% speeding and 20% distracted drivers. None of these crashes would be possible with a self-driving car. Often people worry about the possibility of AI completely replacing us in the workplace, leaving us with no jobs. Harari does not believe this is true, though he believes that AI will actually help create new jobs for humans. Those who are willing to cooperate with AI will be ones who flourish in future workplaces. Harari also believes that AI will improve not only automation but also our creativity. For example, chess tournament judges are continuously searching for hints that is, contestant is getting help from computers. The easiest way to identify if somebody is cheating by using a particular aid is when they play particularly creative moves. So as creativity is a sign of AI influence, we can also expect AI to play an important role in our creative arts. The lesson to learn from all this is that the future is bright. We should not be worried about AI potential in the workplace and instead see it as an opportunity. These tools can help us move away from mundane tasks people don't want to do and allow us to spend more time improving society. Chapter 3, Liberty. Harari believes elections are not about that we think about what we say. Despite clear flaws in democracies, most believe it is still better than all its alternatives. Harari argues that big data and AI have potential to run the world in future. If we can make decisions on education, work and society based on data, there is no need for democratic elections. We already learn big data on personal finance, big business and war, so it seems likely that political decisions are the next step. Harari provides that example of how data has been used in warfare to strengthen this argument. He states that when Palestinians make a phone call or post something on social media, they are monitored by Israeli microphones, cameras, drones and software. Then this data is analyzed by algorithms. These algorithms tell Israeli security forces what potential threats might arise. Without this big data, the Israeli soldiers would not be controlling approximately 2.5 million Palestinians. This is an example of big data making human decisions easier. Chapter 4, Equality. Data is far more accessible than our current examples of resources. Land, machines and other resources make it easy for people to acquire wealth unavailable to others. But data is everywhere and can move at the speed of light. You can make many copies as you want, so a future problem is understanding how best to regulate data ownership. The issue has surfaced with the big tech companies struggling to make right decisions about personal data. Chapter 5, Community. Technology addiction is importantly significantly impacting human connection and community. The internet has helped people who live far away to keep in touch. For example, the author explains he can easily speak to his cousin in Switzerland. Without technology, he could easily lose connection with his relative. That said, technology has negatively impacted our more immediate connections and communities. The author explains that technology has made it harder for him to talk to his husband over breakfast as they are constantly looking at their smartphones. Chapter 6, Civilization. Historically, human mankind has been divided into countless civilizations. Thousands of years ago, these civilizations would have consisted of merely a handful of people. Although the number of independent civilizations has reduced over time, Harari argues the future holds a single global civilization. We are already at a stage where we can contact almost anyone in the world. The outcome of this type of civilization is that people will care more about their enemies than partners due to increased competition. Nationalism. Harari points out that there is a difference between benign patriotism and nationalism. Patriotism should be built on the idea that your nation is unique, which is true for all countries. It is when people start believing their nation is superior than issues arise. The issue with nationalism is that narrow beliefs bleed into their worldwide views. Harari uses an example of climate change skepticism. A left-wing socialist and rarely tweet claiming that climate change is a Chinese hoax. These types of tweets are almost solely produced by the nationalistic right. These nationalists would rather deny truth that they have to work internationally to solve a global problem. Harari believes technology has potential to solve the issues it has encouraged. He uses example of lab-grown meat. Animal agriculture creates more carbon emissions than all the transportation combined. So to tackle climate change, there needs to be an alternative. Lab-grown meat could offer this alternative. Although expensive at first, Harari explains the clean meat is expected to be cheaper than slaughtered meat within a decade. Harari also argues that the way you approach politics must change if you want to counteract nationalism. National politics will never tackle the problem of national identity, so we must globalize politics, science and economics through global governance. Chapter 8, Religion. To help us understand the problem of religion in modern society, Harari outlines three types of problems we face: technical problems, policy problems, identity problems. Karl Marx has previously argued that religion does not have much to contribute to policy debates. The author agrees and subsequently believes that war between religions is not policy-based. Instead, it appears to be a combination of technical and identity problems. That said, religion allows the smallest differences to have significant impact. For example, Eastern Orthodox and Western Christians split due to inclusions of the world and the sun in a creed. So Harari believes Freud was potentially correct when he claimed religion involves an obsession with minor differences. Chapter 9, Immigration. Starts by specifying the basic conditions required for immigration to occur. These are three of them. The host country allows immigrants into their country. The immigrants are expected to embrace the norms and values of host country. If the immigrants integrate, they will eventually become equal members of the host country. Author believes that the large proportion of people who dislike immigration are not racists. They are actually culturists. Most people who are anti-immigration are so because they want to maintain the nation's current culture. For example, there will be numerous liberal minorities who can migrate to intolerant society considering acceptable as a host society. But there will be threshold where the numbers of liberal minorities will be contracting the country's intolerant society. To better understand anti-immigration people, we must accept that they might be culturalists rather than racists. Chapter 10, Terrorism. Author believes that overreaction of terrorism poses a great far than threat than terrorism itself. Terrorists have killed very few people but can terrify billions due to political responses. The author points out that each year 9/11 only 50 people are killed in the EU, 10 in the US and 7 in China. Globally, 25,000 people die of terrorism, 7 million people die of air pollution. Despite this difference, terrorism produces considerably more fear and gains far more attention. So instead of encouraging fear in society, Harari believes effective counter-terrorism should the government should make sure these actions against terror networks are relatively hidden. The media must be forced to avoid hysteria and reporting on terror-related war. You and all other citizens must liberate the imaginations from the terror and remember how uncommon terrorist acts are. 11. War. The prevalence of war has dropped considerably over the past few decades. Harari believes that partly due to our transition away from fighting our resources and towards fighting over knowledge. You could previously obtain wheat fields, gold mines and oil fields, and from warfare you can't conquer knowledge through war. So Harari believes that modern warfare will be based on information technology and biotechnology rather than guns and bombs. At present, people get their most valuable asset, their personal data, in exchange of free email service and funny cat idiots. It's a bit like African and Native American tribes who unwittingly sold entire countries to Europeans in exchange of colorful beads and cheap trinkets. Humility. The highlight of this chapter is that humans naturally show humility. Apes have a whole tendency to help the poor and needy. They evolved these behaviors millions of years before the Bible instructed ancient Israelites to do the same. So there is no need to rely on religious text or any other teachings to convince society that they will show humility. Society will naturally show humility without religion. God. Mortality doesn't mean following divine commands, it means that reducing suffering. Here, in order to act morally, morality doesn't mean following divine commands, it means reducing suffering. Hence, in order to act morally, you don't need to believe in a myth or story, you just need to develop a deep appreciation of suffering. Building on this point from chapter 12, Harari also thinks that you do not believe in God to be moral. Morality is about reducing suffering and this does not require beliefs in a myth or story. Again, society does not need to believe in powerful God to be scared to doing the right thing. Immoral behavior is always counterproductive in the long run. So society will always shun those who behave in this way. For example, no one wants to live in a society where strangers are constantly raped and murdered. Chapter 14, Secularism. Questions you cannot answer are usually far better for you than answers you cannot question. The alternative to building a society on God is building one on secularism. Harari notes, we must remember the foundation of secular code. Truth, compassion, equality, freedom, courage and responsibility. Chapter 15, Ignorance. Just like animals, humans make most decisions based on emotional reactions and shortcuts, but emotions and heuristics are not sufficient in the modern world. The key to human success in the modern world is our ability to think in together in large groups. This has allowed us to rely on other skills for almost our needs. Stephen and Furness call this knowledge illusions. Dynamic mobilization. With our current collective knowledge, finding the truth through individual experimentation is a waste of time. We are better off remaining individually ignorant, but create collective knowledge. Chapter 16 and 17. Post-truth. The modern world is full of fake news. This said, Harari believes the type of fake news has been present for centuries. He describes modern fake news as 1,000 people believing a made-up story for 1 month. When a billion people believe a made-up story for 1,000 years, that's what calls religion. That said, we can learn about the power of fiction by looking at religion. Fiction can bring people together and make large-scale human cooperation possible. So we must start using fiction to push good science to the masses. For example, a good science fiction movie is worth far more than an article in Science or Nature. Science fiction. Building on the last chapter, Harari spends some time talking in great depth about science fiction. He believes that the most important artistic genre in the 21st century, The Matrix and The Westworld. So science fiction must be responsible in how it depicts scientific realities. Without taking responsibility in this way, we could be left with a society where most people are focusing on wrong problems. Harari believes the worst failing of science fiction is its confusion of intelligence with consciousness. He is not worried about a war between robots and humans. He believes that there could be conflict with a small set of human elites. So Harari argues that Karl Marx is still a better guide on artificial intelligence than Steven Spielberg. Chapter 19, Education. In a world deluged by irrelevant information, clarity is power. Hey Google Meet. Overwhelmed. In a world overwhelmed by irrelevant information, clarity is power. Much of what children learn today will be irrelevant in 2050. So teachers need to stop overloading the students with information, develop their ability to make sense of new information. Future adults need to identify important information among all irrelevant data. Education experts are now pushing for schools to start teaching what Harari calls the forces: critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity. Chapter 20, Meaning. Harari includes the teachings of Buddha to explain the fluidity of meaning. The Buddha taught that there are three basic universal realities. Everything is constantly changing. Nothing has any enduring essence. Nothing is completely satisfied. Everything is ever changing. The Buddha believes that the life has no meaning. This is not an issue though. You do not need to try and create meaning. Suffering emerges from attempting to do so. Nothing has enduring essence. Chapter 21, Meditation. Harari agrees with ancient philosophers by arguing the deepest source of our suffering is in our minds. In fact, suffering does not objectively exist outside of mind. Meditation allows us to better understand this reality and challenge your mind. It helps you focus on your consciousness, which is the greatest mystery in the universe. Meditation also prepares us for the future, as Harari believes we should understand our minds before algorithms make match up for us. Final summary. 21 Lessons for the 21st Century is a book that looks for the future. Harari believes that technology can solve many problems we have encountered so far in 21st century. That said, some issues can emerge from developing technology if we are not willing to integrate into our society. For example, many people worry about AI taking our jobs. Harari instead argues that accepting AI within the workplace will cut out mundane jobs no one wants to do and allows humans to focus on more important, enjoyable tasks. This is the theme throughout the book, with each lesson considering an issue we currently face and looking for the future for potential solutions. So guys, thank you for listening and have an amazing day. Bye.